And O2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Business Bunker Show here on channelradio.co.uk in association with bizradio.co.uk. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews. We have a packed lineup of guests today, and we're also going to be joined later in the show for my regular catch-up with a stonkingly gorgeous Jill Serkin. First of all, I want to say a huge thank you to this week's show sponsor. The Business Bunker Show is pleased to partner with DG East. They're independent new and used vehicle suppliers and services supplying car and light commercial vehicles utilising a majority of UK-based leasing operators' services. You can find out more about their services and their company by going to www.dgeast.co.uk. So a huge thank you to the folks at DG East for supporting this week's show. As I said, we've got a packed lineup to you here from today. Two great guests and a catch-up with Jill Serkin. But of course, as always, we'd love to hear from you, all the businesses and people out there in the southeast of England. You can get in touch with us, and the easiest way to do that is to tweet me at VanillaWeb, and please use the hashtag BBunker. That's hashtag BBunker. I've had some tweets already. Let's kick off with a few of those. Calm. Caring Altogether on Romney Marsh. They're a charity, and they say if there's any golf fans out there who want to sign up to a Rotary Club of Romney Marsh Golf Day on the 28th of April, a sign-up deadline is the 31st of March. You can follow them on the social media to find out all the details for getting involved in that, and their Twitter handle is Calm, C-A-R-M, Romney Marsh, all one word, Calm Romney Marsh. Give them a follow, and find out about the golf day on the 28th of April. We've also had a tweet from, hold on, where is it? It's gone. Oh, there it is. The Recovery Well. And this is the lovely Sandra, and she says, "Hello, Vanilla Webb and Jill Serkin and the Business Bunker. It's a glorious day today. I hope you're going to have a great show. I'm busy decorating the new premises and hope to have the Wellbeing Hub ready for business for the 12th of April. Spaces for qualified therapists for hire by day or half day. Contact me for more information." And the easiest way to contact Sandra is via her Twitter handle, which is Recovery Well. Or you can go to her website, which is www.therecoverywell.co.uk. So do check that out. That's a wellbeing hub, hopefully due to open on the 12th of April over in East Kent there, Ramsgate, I do believe. Martin from Charity Buddy has said, "Hi, Paul, we'll be listening. Have a good show. Can we have a shout-out, please?" Of course you can. Do give Martin a follow. His Twitter handle is charity_buddy, and he raises money for all kinds of local charities. So do check him out. Give him a follow. Find out what he's up to. Okay, I'll just... I'll tell you what, Twitter is a complete nuisance now. They just interfere with the stream so much that I had everything lined up with all the things that have come in. I started to look through it to read some of them out to you, and they've completely removed them. They've removed half a dozen tweets. Not they haven't deleted them, they just don't show them to you. So you have to keep refreshing it until they come back. It's ridiculous. A really ridiculous thing that Twitter keep doing. So what I'm going to do, because I can't be bothered with that anymore, is I'm going to read you a couple of emails that I've got. Kent Creative Online Meetup. This is a weekly meetup. It takes place on a Friday, and the next one is obviously this Friday, the 26th of March. It's a free meetup for artists and creatives in Kent, and it's there to chat, collaborate, learn, share ideas, and get support. And this week's meeting is at 10 a.m. It's 10 to 11.15, and it's a simple get-together with like-minded creative people supporting each other and building a robust community for artists where support the support comes from the community itself. If you want to find out more, go to their website, which is www.kentcreative.org. That's www.kentcreative.org. Do check that out. I did mention this last week, but I said I'd give another mention. And it's an app, and it's set to boost businesses and help customers feel safer than ever. It's an app that tells you how busy your favourite shops and restaurants are in real time. And it's set to boost businesses as they get ready for reopening later on in the year. Canterbury City Council will be the first local authority in the South to roll out The Locale, which is the name of the app, and it's free for customers and businesses to use. The app also draws information straight from Google business pages and informs users of venue opening times, COVID-safe measures, queues, locations, and reviews. The Locale is expected to be more valuable than ever as the district reopens, and the app team has been busy building a more comprehensive selection of categories for businesses and venues to select from. The app can be downloaded from the App Store or via the website www.thelocale.info. It's currently free to both customers and businesses, and anyone wanting to sign their venue up should contact by email info@thelocale.info. QR codes to download the app have already been featured on Canterbury student maps and shopping maps in Whitstable, Tankerton and Herne Bay, along with a series of adverts promoting the hard work of businesses to make the high street safe. If businesses want to find out more, then you can contact the local economy team at Canterbury Council on business@canterbury.gov.uk. That's business@canterbury.gov.uk. So check out that app, The Locale, if you're in Canterbury and you'd like to have a look at it. Okie doke. What have we got? Let me give you one more tweet of the ones that I can find, at least. This is bizarre. Twitter really is bizarre these days. Let me see what I can find here. The lovely folks at Athelbrae say, hello, Business Bunker team. We're asking all businesses COVID-affected or COVID-advantaged to complete a five-minute survey on their plans going forward after the regulations relax. A great many are now planning on-site training for May the 17th. Anyone interested, get in touch and we'll send you a link. So if you'd like to participate in that survey, and I hope you do, then get in touch with the lovely folks at Athelbrae. Easiest way to do that is follow them on the Twitter, Athelbrae, A-T-H-E-L-B-R-A-E-L-T-D, Athelbrae Limited, or their website, athelbrae.co.uk. So do check that out. What else have we got here? Let's see. Chips and Dinks, the lovely folks, Bev and Tony, Chips and Dinks, another great show lined up for today to make our Tuesday even better. Spring is definitely in the air. Well, thank you so much, and I do appreciate you guys listening to us, and you do such fantastic work, not only on mending my motors, but spraying my dining room table and upcycling and recycling and fixing things. Do give Chips and Dinks a follow on the Twitter. They're fantastic folks. Okay, and the lovely Kim Stevens at Care in Kent. I'd love a shout out on the Business Bunker for the health and care workers. It is believed that over 1,000 health and care workers have died after testing positive for COVID-19 since March 2020. And we will remember their names. And she's using the hashtag National Day of Reflection 2021, because it is, in fact, that day today. So thank you for that, Kim. And that is incredibly sad, isn't it? And Athelbrae say they're all tuned in and listening. Well, that's fantastic. Thank you so much. We do appreciate you supporting us. Do you know what? I'm going to kick off straight away with some cheesy tunage. And boy, is it cheesy this week. It's a great tune, but the connection to our first guest is more than tenuous, to say the least. But let's have a listen anyway.
The street, concentrating on trucking right, I heard a dark voice beside of me, and I looked round in a state of fright. I saw four faces, one man, a brother from the gutter. They looked me up and down a bit and turned to
to each other. Chain. He said, I'll give you $1. I said, you got to be joking, man. It was a present from my mother. He said, I like it, I want it, I'll take it off your hands and you'll be sorry. You cross me, you better understand that you're alone.
CC, Dreadlock Holiday. You wait till you find out what the tenuous link from that is. But I am a big 10cc fan anyway. Fantastic track. So let's hear from our first guest, which is Mr. Alex Kiernan from Lock Associates. You see what I did there?
It's a pleasure now to welcome onto the Bunker Show Mr. Alex Kiernan. Alex is the director and lawyer from Lock Associates Group. Good afternoon, Alex. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
It's an absolute pleasure. For those regular listeners, you know we're joined on a fairly regular basis by the folks from Lock Associates. But just for those that are new listeners or don't recall, just give us a quick overview of Lock Associates and what you are and what you do.
So I suppose brief overview is that we help employers and employees, but particularly employers, look after and manage their people. So in a nutshell, we're sort of try and be the one-stop shop really for employment management issues. I'm one of the solicitors within the team in the legal sort of wing of the department, and we specialise on obviously employment law.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you for that, Alex. Okay, well, let's kick off, because I want to talk to you a bit about some of the issues, because especially during the pandemic and during the lockdown and during the furlough and all the other things that have happened to us over the lot, and it is almost a year. It's a year next week, isn't it, since the three-week lockdown started.
We had a baby right at the start of lockdown, so very easily timed.
Right.
The stress that I've gone through over that period.
Right. Funnily enough, our other guest on the show this week was made redundant at the start of lockdown, started her own business, and then had twins. Interesting.
I think we're going to see a lot of that. I think the stats already show it, don't they? Lots of people setting up new businesses.
Yeah, absolutely. But for those of us still kind of working for somebody else, one of the big things that has happened here is that a lot of us have been sent home to work. And that remote working, home working thing was a thing before the pandemic anyway, but it was a thing that a lot of corporates especially weren't particularly interested in. That's radically changed because we've had to adapt to it. So I'd just like some of your thoughts and feelings about homework, remote work, and I guess there's a couple of themes here, which is what are the issues around it in terms of staff management and all the employee health and safety and all those kind of issues, versus the strategic thing about how, you know, when this ends, are we all going to go back to the office, or, you know, are we going to keep remote working? Those kind of things. So whichever way you want to attack that, I'd be interested in your thoughts.
Well, I suppose should we talk sort of high level on the strategic, what we think is going to happen, first of all? And I think that everyone can see that, you know, that this has been a bit of a watershed moment, I think, for a lot of companies and employees in terms of looking at home working, which they hadn't probably done too much before in many cases. You know, and I would say even myself, although I have worked from home prior to this, I'd never worked from home in you know, in totality. And I wasn't actually that positive about lots of home working, but having done it as a bit of an experiment, which we've all lived through now, I personally found it's worked really well for me. I think it's clear, basically, that this is going to be, there is going to be more home working going forwards, generally speaking. I think that's clear and obvious. I don't think every company is going to stay as we are at the moment, where everyone is sort of bottled up in their own houses, working entirely from home. There's been a lot of discussion with the clients that we work with around the phrase hybrid working, or I've seen it called agile working. So, you know, I think the future is going to be, for many people, some working at home and some time in the office. But it's obviously going to be, you know, completely varied. And one of the things that I've been sort of speaking to clients about, and I think is really important, is it's looking at the needs of your business, really, and how it works for you as a business. It's not right for all businesses to be 100% working from home or 30% working from home. It really depends on the business and the nature of what you do, the people that are working for you, and how the job operates. So I think there is no doubt overall that a change has happened, and we can't sort of put that genie back in the box. I think we're going to have to see how it progresses, but I think lots of employers will have much more home working.
Absolutely. I mean, not least of which that they've had to rush to invest in a whole heap of technology to make that happen to make everything happen. I was talking to some people from the event industry recently, and a lot of event companies have taken their events online. And again, even though they will want to return to physical events eventually, they've made a huge investment now in online seminars. So I do think the way forward for them is going to be a hybrid event.
Absolutely. And like you say, people have invested in it. People have also invested in their own little home offices. I'm one of those. You know, so we're just much more set up for it now because we've tried the experiment. And for many organisations, that experiment has actually worked really quite well. And there's all sorts of aspects. You know, there's the savings that they've made as well. Lots of entities now looking at getting rid of those large sort of city offices, cutting those costs, having people work from home, especially if they're actually producing more work and the staff are happier, which is not always the case. It really depends, I think.
Absolutely. And of course, there's also the eco side of this as well, where, you know, absolutely, if a lot more of us are not commuting any longer, you know, we're not driving our cars to work, we're not all crowding on trains and planes and all the rest of it to go to work, there's an eco benefit to working from home to some extent as well.
Absolutely right. And the family aspect.
Yeah.
You know, I've got two young children. Mm. And whereas before this, because, you know, I work in a busy role. Yeah. You know, on a busy day, even if I left sort of about 6:30, I often wouldn't necessarily see them before bedtime. Mm. Now, if I have a busy day, I can stop at that point, see the children, and then go back to work if I need to. It just helps you.
Yeah.
You know, for many people, I think it's been a real positive. But it's been equally, I think it's horses for courses very much, because some people have really, really struggled with it.
Yeah, sure. But again, as you say, I think it's going to be a hybrid way, isn't it? I think we'll work partly from home, we'll go to the office for a meeting, or maybe we'll just meet somewhere else for a staff meeting or, a weekly review meeting. And sometimes that might be online, sometimes it might be live, and more likely it will be a combination of both.
I think hybrid role is going to become a lot more common, certainly.
Yeah.
But I think that there is a slight danger in I think there'll be lots of organisations, you know, I'm speaking to many, who are already saying that's just not really going to work for them. They want to go back to that traditional approach because, you know, in some cases, quite rightly, that works better for them as an office, and the experiment hasn't worked well for them.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're absolutely right. And there are going to be a range of different things that people will do, a lot of it depending on the industries they're in. Now, one of the interesting things, I'm going to ask you this. I don't expect you to be able to answer it because I'm going to kind of throw this at you. But it's just something that came up for me the other day. Are you familiar with the concept of a digital nomad? It's an American term,
right.
And it tends to be people that work in software or digital. And effectively, because of the nature of the things that they do, they don't have, they can be absolutely anywhere in the world.
Yeah.
Well, so somebody approached me the other day and said, right, you want me to work from home? I'm going to live in France.
Yeah.
And I started to investigate that. And that is incredibly complicated from an employee point of view, because there are just so many rules that are different in France, are different here, in terms of how you employ someone. Now, you know, I would, as far as I'm concerned, they're employed by me. I'm paying UK tax, national insurance, and all the rest of it. But they live in France. But the French don't like that. So I just made me think how these digital nomads get on. I'm not expecting you to answer this because you probably, you know, have no idea because nobody's ever mentioned it to you before.
I haven't heard the term. I have to say, digital nomad. But right. Definitely the issue of people being able, if you are just 100% working from home. You know, that clearly people will say, well, okay, fine, I'll go and work out in the countryside. I won't work in London anymore. I'll move out there and have a nice sort of lifestyle, potentially move to another country. So I think it's definitely something that if companies do go for the sort of extreme hybrid version where it's mainly working from home or total work from home, then I think that is, you're absolutely right, that is going to become a live and quite interesting issue, especially if you're working in different countries.
Yeah.
One of the issues that I have talked about with clients in that regard, and I think it's quite interesting, is getting the sort of enhanced, I'm going to call it London waiting, wages, if you're working in the city. And that's really interesting, because if you're getting that additional payment as an employee, and then suddenly you're not actually working in London, you're working outside of London. And I think that's going to be a really interesting aspect to see how that develops, because I do think, as we can already see, people are going to be operating in that way. And how are those companies, how are those city companies going to facilitate that? Are they going to freeze pay for those people? Are they going to reduce pay? It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, it can throw up a lot of legal challenges to that as well.
Yeah.
Depending on what basis, I guess, they were given it in the first place, you know.
Yeah.
You know, like a lot of things, once it's hard to take things away once you've given them.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting point, and a point I actually hadn't thought of myself. Absolutely. Okay, let's move on if we can, Alex, to some of the health and safety and legal requirements and HR requirements of people that are working remotely.
Yeah, and it won't surprise you that there's quite a lot to talk about here.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's almost where do I start? I mean, there's so much. I suppose key points I would say is, for me, stepping back slightly, this is a really good time, I think, if you're an employer, you absolutely need to be thinking about what policies you're going to have in place and what sort of strategy you're going to go for going forwards in terms of, are you going to go traditional, people are in the office, are you going to go hybrid, are you going to go work from home or whatever in between? Mm. But I think whatever you're going to do and whatever is right for your business, it's now is absolutely time you need to be thinking about it and deciding what, and that's the framework that, you know, deciding where you're going to go, you then build the framework around that. But if you are deciding that you're going to have more long-term home working arrangements, some of the things you need to think about are absolutely, you're changing their contract, in essence. So think about looking at updating those. You know, that's not a major thing. It's just sort of reflecting what you're agreeing and how you're going to operate going forwards.
Yep.
Obviously, there's a whole raft of potential policies that you then need to think about. I would generally recommend that you look at having a home working policy.
Yep.
And that's something that you know, we've put together a sort of home working policy pack for our clients, which I think they're going to find really useful. But those types of documents, do think about now if you're going down that route. And the kind of things that that's going to involve really is confidential information, I would say. That's a big one that potentially gets forgotten about if people are working from home. You've got a slight lack of control over that when people are at home. You don't know where confidential papers, you know, regarding your clients are being left. You don't know, once we're allowed to see people again, who's going to come around their house, how secure they're being held, what's going on. And that's got all sorts of ramifications. We've got some strict rules now on GDPR and data protection with potential fines for employers who will be responsible for that data ultimately if they collect it. So rules around that. Health and safety is another big one that I've spent a lot of time talking about. In broad terms, I mean, there's a lot of, again, big topic, lots of health and safety legislation out there, but in broad terms, you are required, you're under the same obligations if someone's working in the office as if they're working from home as an employer. So you still have an obligation to ensure that you provide, as far as possible, a safe place of work. We've seen lots of employers, obviously, speaking to their employees, looking at how they got the right desk set up is a sort of easy and obvious one. Desk assessments is something that, you know, we provide as a service to help employers check that their employees have that right set up. Mm. Yeah. Two main reasons. One, they've got the obligation to look after their health and safety. And two, actually, you kind of want to look after their health and safety, clearly, because otherwise they might get sick and then they're not working. So that there's lots of aspects that go along with that, of course.
Yeah.
Looking at special equipment, people, potentially if someone's got a disability, you're on an obligation to look at reasonable adjustments and talk to them about that. One of the other interesting things that we've done, actually, and we've experimented on some of our employees, is doing psychometric testing to assess how well, essentially mentally, you might cope with working at home in that different environment. And that, you know, the mental health aspect at the moment is huge, as you will know.
Yeah.
And that also ties into the health and safety point. So I think it's really important for an employer to look at all of these things. One of the things that we've done in that regard is you know, basically assess how you can help that employee if they are working from home, if they're maybe showing that they might have more issues doing so.
Absolutely. Can I ask you a couple of questions? Yeah. And they're completely in different directions. Sorry about that, but I wanted to let you say what you were saying because it was interesting and fascinating. Just coming back quickly to the equipment, I own a number of companies. I've got lots of people working for me. I know, for instance, that all the equipment I've got has to be pat tested on a regular basis, for instance.
Yeah. So
if we're supplying computers, which I suppose some of us will be, to our employees at home and some technical equipment, are we going to have access to their home to do pat testing and things like that, do you think?
The pat testing is an interesting one. I mean, as a broad point, I do think that's where it comes into your policies and procedures and what you're putting in place in terms of your contract, and that's where it needs to be looked at. So I think as a broad point in terms of policy, I think you should be indicating to your employees that you may need to come out to their homes to assess their workstation for their own good and to ensure that you're complying with your own health and safety duties. So, yeah, but it's a funny one working from home. And we're definitely going to see cases on that, you know, this going through now that everyone's doing it more often. You know, it's unlikely, for example, that an employer is going to be held liable if, you know, you've left out a cable downstairs in your front room of your own house and you trip over it during a working day. That seems quite unlikely to me. You can be held liable. But, you know,
You never know what people will do.
Then that potentially, you might potentially face some liability.
Yeah. Okay, and then the other thing I want to talk to you about, which I think is much more prevalent and of much more concern, and you touched on it there, is the well-being of employees. Yeah. Obviously, as you said, you know, different people will react in different ways. Some people will find working on their own wonderful. You know, they don't have their boss breathing down their neck. They don't have to deal with, you know, Dave in the post room who's a pain in the bum, you know, and they like it. Other people will miss dreadfully human interaction.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, yeah, for me as an employer, my biggest concern is I can't see anybody on a daily basis. You know, normally when I'm walking around my office and, you know your people, you go, you know, Alex, you're all right. You look a bit down this morning, mate. Yeah, everything okay? You know, you can't do that any longer. So for me, that is a big issue in even spotting a potential problem.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And we've spent a lot of, and we are spending a lot of time working with clients on these issues, because there is no doubt that managing is a challenging thing to do anyway.
Right.
Managing someone where you've been used to do it in the office and then going to them being at home requires you to adapt and requires you to change the way that you're managing and the way you operate. And we provide training on this. We started to provide home working training for managers to manage those home working because it's just a really important issue. And I suppose some of the key takeaways from that and some of the things you've mentioned is, yeah, you need to check in with the people that you're managing and working with to check that they're, you know, to check on work, et cetera, but also to check on how they're getting on, you know, asking how are you doing? Mm. And that's a really important aspect of keeping in touch with them. I think that, and this comes to a degree back to the policies as well. It's all of these things to think about and include and add into policies and guides for those who are working at home. It's things like making sure that they don't become a workaholic, you know, making sure they actually do leave their desk and they go out, encouraging them to take a lunch break.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I can see that being another aspect of a potential dispute in the future where, you know, you're required to take certain lunch breaks under the working time regulations, and employees not doing that, or perhaps not feeling like they're able to do that when they're at home. So I think, it's important communication, adapting management, encouraging employees to do the right things, which we all know we should be doing, going out, speaking to people. Also on top of that, another thing that I think maybe going to be a real benefit if people work like this is that I think you should be having more probably social events once we can see each other. Outside of the sort of workplace. And I think that actually lots of offices probably, well, maybe they haven't done that as much, but if you're going to be working from home, I think it becomes really important to... I hate to say organised fun, because no one likes that.
You will enjoy yourself.
But I think it becomes really much more critical to organise those social events for people that are working that way. Absolutely.
Yeah.
For mental health as well, if nothing
else. Yeah. And they can be very simple things. They don't have to be big.
Absolutely.
Big parties. You can just have a lunchtime get together and stuff like that. I mean.
Yeah,
It's something that we do anyway in one of my businesses, Fruitworks. When we were open, well, obviously we've been closed for a year, but when we were open, the third Friday in every month, we had pizza Friday, everybody would come and have pizza and a beer.
It's
and whatever.
Great. I've actually got cocktails later on with my workplace. I got a little package sent through to me. I must say, I forgot we were doing it, and I got very confused. I got a pack with sort of some lemons in. Lots of alcohol, some sugar. I got a bit crazy one night and bought something weird on Amazon. But no, things like that are really, really important to bring the group together. I think.
Absolutely.
And the other thing I just want to mention, if I can, because it's been an interesting thing that we've seen develop, is to emphasise to your employees that what is expected of them and the cultural norms that is expected of them in the workplace. And it sounds like an odd thing and an obvious thing to say, but there is something about working in your own home environment, taking you out of that more formal office environment.
Yeah.
But I think for some people has changed the way they behave, you know, and we've had people behaving, you know, or having inappropriate dress on Zoom calls, you know, when you're out there representing your employer.
Yeah.
Inappropriate things in the background. I'm sure we all saw the thing on the shelf for the BBC woman.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And, you know, just examples of that, inappropriate actions. So all of that means it's a really good thing to just remind people of the policies that you probably already had, that they still exist, and you still expect them to act in this sort of way and in keeping with the culture.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you say, a lot of what you mentioned comes down to gearing up to do this on a longer term basis, you know, to overcome background and stuff like that. What I would do with my company is say, right, here's a company background that everybody has to use on Zoom, which is just, you know, a green screen that you put behind you that says, you know, we're in Fruitworks or whatever.
Or this, you know, here's a reminder, this is our dress code policy. Just so we're clear, this applies when you're on a Zoom call with a client. You know, don't turn up wearing your dressing gown and slippers.
Yeah, from the waist up dress code.
from the waist up, quite right.
Yeah, absolutely. Kieran, we're almost at the end of the interview. We're running out of time. And I just want to ask you one completely different thing that a lot of our listeners are concerned about, which is the touted mandatory vaccine for employees that some people have been talking about. And I just wanted to briefly ask you your views on that as it stands at the moment. I mean, as it stands, I don't think anybody's actually implemented that in any meaningful way yet, but a lot of people are talking about it.
I should probably start with saying, because I've had this question quite a bit, you know, can an employer force you to have a vaccine? The short answer is no, of course they can't. You know, they can't hold you down, stick a needle in your arm in that sort of way. But what some employers are doing this now, and what employers might try and do is sort of find ways in which they can compel employees or heavily encourage, let's say, to have that vaccine. And I think it's particularly the case in the sort of care home type setting at the moment. That's where I've had questions regarding it. You know, I've spent quite a while talking about it. Fundamentally, we don't have the case law and the precedent that I can look back on and say this is how the law stands on this particular issue, because we're into very new territory on some of these things.
Cool.
But what I can say is sort of my sort of personal views around some of the issues that might arise. So, you know, can an employer not employ someone or dismiss them if they haven't had the vaccine? The short answer to that is yes. You know, you can't. An employer can dismiss someone. It's very difficult to stop them doing that. The question that comes off of that is, well, have they done it lawfully?
Yeah.
And that is obviously a more complex question. I think that the two kind of key main things that tend to crop up when we talk about in that regard is, well, unfair dismissal legislation. Was their dismissal fair? And secondly, discrimination. Dealing with the unfair dismissal, you in the UK, you need to have, it's actually just under, but I'm going to call it 2 years employment, continuous employment, before you gain the right to bring what's known as an ordinary unfair dismissal claim. So if you have 6 months employment, you don't have the right to bring an ordinary unfair dismissal claim.
Right.
That, I think, that factor is going to make you in a much more vulnerable position if you're an employee. And your employer says, look, we're dismissing you because you've not had the vaccine. You know, especially if it's in a setting like a care home.
Right.
If you've got more than 2 years service, I think the situation is a bit more complex. And I think it really depends on, for me, ultimately the tribunal, simplifying it down, will look at, you know, whether you followed a reasonable process and acted reasonably within the law. And I think in a normal standard office, you know, like your office environment, for example, I think it's going to be very, very challenging to justify for someone with more than 2 years service that it was a fair dismissal.
Right.
Dismiss them because they wouldn't have the vaccine and you wanted them to.
Yeah.
Because I just think it's quite difficult. It's going to be quite difficult to justify. And ultimately, you know, we don't live in a totalitarian state. People, I don't necessarily agree with people's views on it. I've had the vaccine, but some people do have genuinely held views that aren't completely unreasonable and concerns about the risk of having a vaccine. So there's that, I think, and we're going to have to see the case law to see what happens with it. Absolutely. In a care home setting, I think there's a much better argument because right. It's so critical. And I think it's easier for an employer to justify. Again, we'll have to see what happens with that.
Okay.
On the discrimination front, I can't see that there's not, let's say, an obvious discrimination argument out there. We have something known as the Equality Act.
Mm.
That sets out certain characteristics, you know, like race, age, on which you're not able to be treated, broadly speaking, you know, unfairly or
yeah.
differently.
Yeah.
Reluctance to have a vaccine isn't on there. It's not on that list. So it's not an obvious discrimination point. There might be circumstances where you're saying that it's indirectly discriminatory. You know, potentially if you had a medical reason why you couldn't have it and someone sacked you, then that's one route. But there isn't really too much of an obvious one for me. I think pregnant women at the moment, from a discrimination perspective, are being advised that they might not want to take the vaccine.
Sure.
So I think if you can see a scenario where if someone said, well, you've got to have it and I'm going to dismiss you, but they didn't because they were pregnant or breastfeeding, there's a potential angle there. But there's certainly not an obvious route. Someone who's reluctant in most circumstances on the discrimination front at the moment.
Absolutely. Alex, look, thank you so much for that. Sadly, we run out of time. It's an interesting subject, and I'm sure we're going to come back to this time and time again. But thank you so much for spending the time talking to us this afternoon. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Very quickly, give us a shout out for the Lock Associates website so that people can find out more about what you do.
Sure. It's www.lockassociates.co.uk. And there's all sorts of really useful information on there about, you know, all sorts of articles that will really help, I think, if you're thinking about these issues.
Fantastic. Alex, thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon. We'll see you again soon.
Thanks a lot.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Flexible training solutions for the glass, glazing and wider construction industries. fitfortrade.co.uk for occupational compliance and peace of mind.
Grow your business with Kent's Best Business Events. Visit bestbusinessevents.co.uk.
Become part of our community to build your social media habits with workouts. Increase your brand's presence and engagement. Go to wedosocialmedia.co.uk to register for 2 free social media workouts every Wednesday. 10:30 a.m. Facebook and 11:30 a.m. LinkedIn.
Jobsinkent.com, the quick and simple way to advertise your job vacancies in Kent, with prices from just £99 per job per month. Visit Kent's largest job site, jobsinkent.com.
Lock Associates Group. Let us look after all your people needs so you can focus on growing your business. No long-term tie-ins, just responsive, commercially minded support. Find us at lochassociates.co.uk.
This is Channel 2.
Welcome back. That was Alex Keenan from Lock Associates, human resources law firm based in Tunbridge Wells. We've had quite a bit of reaction on Twitter to that interview. Tracy Ferguson says, I've just had a similar conversation with one of my friends in HR about home working. I think that for companies where it works for them, and more importantly, works for the employees, this is a great move forward. We also discussed the impact on the housing market too. People want bigger houses for home office spaces. That's very true, Tracy. There's a couple of ways of looking at that. I mean, there's kind of three elements to that, isn't there? Yes, there's bigger houses or houses with a spare bedroom or a spare room of some kind that you can use. Or there's a house with garden space so that you can have a garden office, you know, a shed office or something like that. But it's also worth talking to someone like Bethany Rossiter of Mirage Designs. Beth's been working on creating office space in smaller spaces. So setting aside a part of your house as an office to use during the day, but it converts back to part of your home. At times you're not using it as an office, and that's with strategic use of furniture and cupboards and things like that. So there's lots of things to look at, but I think you're right. In general terms, I think a wholesale move to home working will have quite a dramatic effect on the housing market. I think as a lot of people move out of big cities back into the countryside or more rural locations, where housing until now has been slightly cheaper and you get more for your money, so it's going to be, there's going to be a lot of interesting ramifications. So some good points there. Kate and Keith Athelbray are saying, great interview with Lock Associates. We're being asked for training around hybrid meetings, as some are working from home and others will be on site. So lots of challenges around managing the diverse attendees to ensure everyone is involved and included. Absolutely. I think beyond any shadow of a doubt, we're going to live in a hybrid world when we come out of this. There's going to be a mixture of face-to-face stuff and online stuff, and they're going to be pulled together quite a lot. You may have seen, some of you, that at Fruitworks, our place in Canterbury, we've created what we call Zoom rooms, where you can have a meeting. So there's enough room to have a meeting with people, physical people at the meeting, but there's also giant screens so that you can include people from Zoom or Teams or whatever technology you use for remote access. So I think hybrids like training, meetings, staff get-togethers are going to be the norm for most organisations moving forward. Tracy again saying, so many things to consider from an employer point of view when working from home. Incredibly interesting conversation with Lock Associates. All employees have to consider needing to allow access for office inspection, for safety, security, GDPR compliance and everything else. It's gonna have a dramatic impact. I don't think people have fully understood, because we've been forced to do it effectively. The government have mandated that we have to work from home if we can possibly do that. We've kind of just adopted that as an approach. Once we're through this and we're back to some form of normality, then all the nitpicking regulations that government can think up will come back into play. And that's going to have a profound effect on how we manage people going forward if they're working in their own homes. You know, and the conversation, the tweet that I was just reading from Tracy, that's another impact of working from home, you know, and home offices, and, you know, how fit they are from a health and safety point of view, etc. And Tracy goes on to say, great point, Paul, about spotting the signs of people who may need some wellbeing support. Could be more of a challenge for many where there's no physical contact. Absolutely. You know, with all the will in the world, it's not as easy to tell on a screen how someone's feeling and how they're reacting as it is when you're face to face. I just think that I'm a great fan of working from home, don't get me wrong, but there are certainly lots of challenges without any shadow of a doubt, and they can all be overcome, but we've just got to start thinking about them and kind of working our way towards how we cope with what is going to be a completely new paradigm and a new way of working and looking at things and handling things. Cool. Fantastic stuff from Alex at Lock Associates here, and we do thank him very much for taking talk to us. I think it's probably time we caught up with the FSB, don't you?
The Federation of Small Businesses News Roundup. Offering advice and guidance for small businesses and the self-employed.
I've got a list here of up-and-coming events. They can all be found and booked in the same place, and I'll give you the link for that at the end of reading all of these out. The 24th of March, there's an FSB Connect Maidstone Metro Bank networking. On the 25th of March, there's FSB Connect Women in Business, hosted by Wendy Flanagan. On the 23rd of April, there's a Women in Business lunch hosted by Sue Hainsby. On the 4th of May, there's a webinar support how to find and win tenders. On the 7th of May, there's a BAME-led business roundtable. I was talking to Gemma Fairclough-Lanes about this yesterday. Gemma's the chair of the BAME group in Kent and Medway. And one of the things I'm interested in is finding out just how many BAME-led businesses there are in the county. And that's not something we know. We don't have that data. So I'm trying to encourage the FSB to put out a survey to see if we can find out. I'll tell you more on that as that unfolds. On the 26th of May, FSB Connect, Maidstone Metro Bank networking again. And then the 27th of May, there's a further Women in Business lunch hosted by Wendy Flanagan. All of those can be found by going to kentbusinessradio.co.uk/FSB, and you'll find them all there with full details of what's going on, the times, dates, and a link to book your place on any or all of those events. Okay. Right. What else have we got from the FSB? There's a webinar, FSB Southeast webinar, how to get your brand noticed on Amazon, taking place on Thursday the 8th of April, 1 till 2pm. This will be an interactive practical session led by Heloise Finch, who's founder of Sell Beyond. It includes a question and answer to enable businesses to get specific tailored advice and practical support about selling on Amazon in the UK. Again, you can find out all the details and book your place by going to kentbusinessradio.co.uk and clicking on the FSB tab on the top of the site, and you'll find it there under events. Some more webinars from FSB Southeast, managing and leading your people effectively. This is taking place tomorrow, manana, Wednesday the 24th of March, 10:30 a.m. to 11:45. An invaluable session full of tips and best practice guidance to help you improve your leadership and management skills in your business. Then on Friday the 26th of March, there's Good Business Pays, Improving Late Payments to Get Paid Sooner. Our panel will look to discuss the issues around late payments for small businesses and talk about the Good Business Pays movement. As I say, that's this Friday, 12:30. Also this Friday at 12:30, why all businesses need to create video content. Join us for this free webinar where we explore the importance of making engaging content to tell your brand story, explain your products, and create unique videos to drive traffic and build brand authority. Again, that's this Friday, 26th of March, 12:30. All of those can be found on the Kent Business Radio website under the FSB tab. I have mentioned this before, but I'm going to keep mentioning it until you all download it. The FSB have a new phone app. With the new FSB app, we're by your side wherever you are. Manage your membership on your mobile, access your benefits, and find out what's happening near you. It's never been easier to make the most of the FSB. Simply click on the App Store, Apple App Store button if you're an iPhone user, or the Google Play Store button if you're an Android phone user. That's the FSB app. And once you've got the app, you can go into the dashboard on the FSB site and explore the FSB Legal Hub. The Legal Hub enables you to browse over 1,100 documents, fact sheets and templates covering a host of categories. They're all available 24/7. It covers HR, debt recovery, health and safety, cybersecurity and so much more. There's also a wealth of helpful resources and documents relating to COVID-19. To access the hub, simply log in to fsb.org.uk and you can click through from the dashboard. There's also how to stay compliant with your workplace pensions. As an employer, it's your responsibility to ensure a compliant workplace pension is in place for all eligible employees. Even if you only employ one person, you're still responsible for making sure that they have a pension scheme set up and that you carry out your duties. Failure to do so can result in fines, so it pays to stay up to date. Be proactive about your pensions. So to find out about that, go to fsb.org.uk/resources page, how to stay compliant. fsb.org.uk/resources page, how to stay compliant. What else have we got here? Apprentices and employers are invited to celebrate at the 3rd Kent and Medway Apprenticeships virtual graduation event. The team behind the county's largest celebration of apprentices is back with a date for 2021. It's been confirmed that Friday the 8th of October will once again mark the success of apprentices employed by firms from across Kent and Medway in a unique ceremony. The event will be streamed via a bespoke online ceremony that will be accessible to employers, apprentices, their families and supporters. To register your interest in the 2021 virtual graduation, either as a sponsor, as an apprentice or as an employer, if you go to the website www.kandmappgrad.org, that's kandmappgrad.org, all one word. Check that out. The virtual apprentice graduation ceremony taking place Friday the 8th of October. And I did mention this last week, but I want to mention it again because I'm excited by this. The Federation of Small Businesses have announced new appointments from Kent. And these are volunteers who will step up in a range of roles with the Nationwide Business Organisation. Gemma Fairclough-Haynes of Orchard Employment Law will become Kent and Medway area leader alongside Tracy Westall, who is the Director of Pecunia. Zoe Cairns of ZC Social Media, well known throughout Kent through her free ZC Social Media Academy training days for small businesses, has been appointed in a new role as Digital and Tech National Lead under National Policy Chair Martin McTague. So those appointments are in place now, and Deborah Turner, who was previously the Kent area leader, is now acts as the FSB national lead for women in enterprise as well as the Southeast policy chair. So congratulations to all of those people. We look forward to you taking up your new roles and to working with you. And that completes the FSB news for this week. Okay, I still got loads of tweets coming in. We're almost up to time for the news, but let's try and catch up with some of the things that are happening here. I've had a tweet from Ibiza Fitness Food. Where have you gone? They say, hello Vanilla Web, we'd love a Business Bunker shout out as we're in our sunny Kentish kitchen creating food for delivery throughout the UK with all our usual passion. They make fantastic food. It's a great concept. Do check them out. Ibiza Fitness Food is their Twitter handle, so give that a check. I did see another tweet. Darren from Intune PR was very taken with my choice of tunage. He liked a bit of a Dreadlock Holiday. Thank you for that, Darren. I'm glad you liked it. Now, I did see another tweet from Slope Off Friday. Can't find it now. But the lovely folks at Slope Off Friday, if you recall, years ago now, before pandemics and lockdowns and all the rest of it, there was a monthly networking event called Slope Off Friday, where people met for a lunch that went on. Oh, here it is. I found it. Where people met for a lunch networking, which tended to get a bit boozy and go on until the early hours of the morning. Anyway, Slope Off Friday say we'll be back soon, dining and socialising again at all the best independent venues in Kent. So do give them a follow on the Twitter. Slope Off Friday is their Twitter handle. And as they say, hopefully they'll be back. Hopefully we'll all be back fairly soon with some, face-to-face meetings and open restaurants and all kinds of things opening up. I mean, we really should be opening by now. I saw something posted earlier that with the vaccination and normal immunity and all that kind of stuff, somebody was saying they expect us to have almost total immunity to COVID within the next 6 to 7 weeks due to the vaccination program. So if that is in any way correct, then we really should be fully opening up fairly soon. There's no reason to keep us locked down for much longer. But we shall see. No doubt. So do keep your tweets coming. Thank you for that. Do keep your tweets coming in. We're going to join the newsroom shortly. When we come back after the news, we've got another fantastic guest to talk to, and I'm also going to catch up with the lovely Jill Serkin. But let's go and join the Channel Radio newsroom for an update on the news, weather, sport and business.